I've heard it echoed by many other people that it means a lot to see these influential women stepping up, saying something, speaking about it openly. And it also meant a lot to a lot of people to see this level of investment go into menopause.
Hi there. I'm Anne-Marie McQueen, a menopause and midlife journalist. I have 25 years of experience covering science, health, and wellness, and I created Hot Flash Inc. to inform, inspire, and entertain people who go through perimenopause and menopause and the people who care about them. This podcast brings you interviews with scientists, doctors, practitioners, entrepreneurs, thought leaders, and more. In the end, our menopause experience is about so much more than our symptoms. I think it's a total and complete mind, body, and soul shift. It's taking radical responsibility for every single part of our lives. It's becoming who we were born to be. It's nothing short of a hero's journey. And I am here walking the path right beside you. We're going to have some fun too. Do you say hot flashes or hot flushes? It depends what side of the pond you're on. However you call them, whatever you call them, I've been having them lately. And as many of you know, they are no fun. One thing that's helping me and other people in perimenopause and menopause dealing with hot flashes or flushes and cold sweats is Become Clothing. The patented anti-flush technology in their sleepwear, clothing, and undies not only cools the skin, but wicks away moisture and helps regulate body heat. I've been wearing one of their nighties to bed, and it's so cool. I'm also a fan of their vests, which I believe is what people in the UK call tank tops. And big news, they are expanding from the UK to the USA. I'd like to thank Become for sponsoring this podcast. Check them out wherever you live on becomeclothing.com and use the code HOTFLASHINC to get a 20% discount. Plus, they're offering free shipping to the US. Harry Metaposse, how are you doing? How is your week? I'm really excited about this week's episode, because I have a real connection to this person, and you're going to hear about that all pretty much off the top. It's Dr. Alicia Jackson. She's an American scientist, health tech entrepreneur, and CEO and founder of Evernow. Evernow is a next-generation telemedicine startup focused on menopause that provides FDA-approved treatment from specialists, all done remotely. Evernow also recently announced a significant round of funding with some very influential people involved. Alicia and I speak all about how she went from MIT to DARPA to menopause, how and why Evernow attracted A-list celebrity funding, modern menopause hormone therapy, what she sees as most important moving forward, and a lot more. I hope you enjoy our discussion. Hello, Alicia. How are you?
I'm well, Anne-Marie. It's great to see you.
We have a whole pandemic since we talked last.
We had a pandemic. We've had a lot going on. We have a war. You know, what isn't happening?
Okay, I love, because you reached out to me when I first started my newsletter and I didn't even know what I was doing. And you said you liked it and it meant so, so much. And we talked a lot. And then we got busy. I didn't lose track of you. I always would think, oh, I got to touch base with Evernow again. And then I see one day this headline: Gwyneth Paltrow, Cameron Diaz back startup raises $28.5 million. And I was like, ooh, that's exciting. I'm going to click on that. And then it was Evernow. I don't know if you heard me. I was woo in Abu Dhabi. I was pretty excited for you. Some big names in the financial world, Glennon Doyle, Abby Wambach, and Drew Barrymore. So we can get into the background and all about Evernow. But can you just walk me through this funding process and the celebrity part of it and how it all works?
Yes, I would love to. And I just want to say, I'm really grateful that you started writing about menopause so early. And the reason you caught our attention was that your tone was just so real and authentic and funny and all the things that we felt like we wanted our brand voice to be. And so finding it in you was truly a gift, because we were like, oh my gosh, this exists. Like, we're not just making it up or hoping for something that doesn't. And so we were very glad to find you, and it's been awesome to just watch your growth and expansion. Mm-hmm. So when we first met, we were just a baby startup. We've always had this really big vision for building a healthcare company on the forefront for women 40 plus, because we really feel that women's healthcare falls off a cliff once a woman is essentially done having babies. And yet this is one of the most critical periods of a woman's health when her whole biology changes. All of her hormones shift. Estrogen goes from 100% of what it was to 1%. And what happens during that biological shift is suddenly not only is her biology different, but her brain functions differently, her body functions differently, and suddenly she's at risk for a bunch of what we have traditionally known as the diseases of aging, but which we now know in women are really triggered by this hormonal shift. So it's cardiovascular disease, osteoporosis, cognitive decline, metabolic disease, the list goes on and on. So we had this very big vision of, oh my gosh, there's this critical point in a woman's life that's completely unaddressed. We really need to go after this. But anytime you're building a startup, you need to become very, very, very focused. And so what we decided to do was let's have a focus on menopause, specifically women who are experiencing severe vasomotor symptoms, whether they're hot flashes or night sweats or vaginal dryness, sleeplessness. We're going to go after prescription medication because hormonal therapies are the gold standard for relieving the symptoms of menopause and protecting a woman's health forward. And because it turns out so many women and so many physicians are really undereducated on these treatments and the symptoms of menopause and how to apply them. So we launched Evernow, and that's when we came across each other, and we were a tiny team, less than 8 people. And we're so focused on building a telehealth platform, focused on menopause, focused on vasomotor symptoms, and focused primarily on prescribing hormonal therapies. And our thesis was, let's prove that there is a market demand for this, that women are hungry for this. And over the, 2.5 years, we built that telemedicine practice, and thousands of women came to our service and became subscribers. And that was a real signal to both the market and to investors that, hey, there's something here. And it seems like the approach that Evernow was taking was really a viable one. Now, what was really interesting during this period of time is that, investors would call us up every so often and talk to us about what we're doing. And as we're going throughout COVID, we're starting to think about raising our Series A, which is our next tranche of funding to take us to the next level. And we got a call actually from Vanessa Larco and Liza Landsman at NEA, which is a very large venture fund. And they had basically said, hey, we're looking at this market and we've done our own research in this space that we are looking for the best company here. We believe we have a thesis around menopause. We have a thesis that women, that we can build a great company here addressing this need. We're really excited about what you're doing. We want to build a relationship. And I would say, yeah, that's good. I'm not raising now. And that's like a typical line startup people use when you're not quite fundraising and you're not sure you want to engage. And so we developed this relationship, I would say, over 6 to 9 months where their team would reach out to us. They'd even share information. We kind of give them an update. Basically, it was over 1.5 years ago. We decided we were ready to go out for our Series A fundraise, kind of had our top 6 or so investors put out the call, put out our deck, reach out to folks. And, really incredibly, we had built such a great relationship with NEA that within a week we had a term sheet from them. Wow. For incredible Series A. And it was just this really magic situation of, not only we had shown product market fit, but now we had, investor company fit. They had really done all their homework. They had seen everybody. They had really decided and made their own decision that we were the company that was in the lead and that could really take the entire market. And that was an incredible vote of confidence. And we had built such a good relationship. I felt really good about it. And so we decided to move forward with them. And so, sometimes it really works out. And usually this doesn't quite happen. And so they made a huge investment in us. It's really incredible what they did.
I'm interested in, there's a lot of complaining like that the menopause space doesn't get investment, but this is clearly changing very quickly. And clearly there's women who are in the space who are like all of us that are like, this is a big white space. Like we all spotted the gap, right? So this is changing clearly. You were contacted, they're doing the research.
Yeah. it's like all things investing, which is you're looking for that investor who gets it, And look, with menopause, it's going to be more likely to be a female investor because she's more likely to have lived the experience or had people around her live that experience. That doesn't mean men are not interested. So many of my earlier investors were men. My first investor was a man. And so I look, does everybody get it? No, not at all. But I have not felt a strong bias. What I've felt is, you know, whether people just got the space or not. Not everybody may get it because menopause hasn't been like at top of mind.
Yeah. Well, it's interesting you say that because, you know, there's a certain kind of tone that people have, like they're complaining, right? I think it's funny because you're not really experiencing what I've heard is that, you know, no one wanted to invest in my menopause company. I've had people say weird things to me too. Like one thing people said over and over was like, what's your target audience? I was like, all women. And I always feel like frustrated. And then it's funny. Yeah. I'm only now 2 years later. I'm like, well, that's the weirdest question.
It turns out there's a lot of people who don't get it. I don't think they're being malicious.
Target their audiences, really. Like, well, let's put our thinking caps on.
I feel like it's pretty well defined. It's a numbers game. You can do the work to educate people. It just takes a while.
Yeah.
It takes a while.
Okay. So the celebrity aspect is obviously gets you like beyond the attention. So do they come to you and the celebrities have already expressed interest? How does that get put together?
It was a mix. After we had brought the funding round together, one of the things we thought really deeply about was how can we make sure we amplify this message? In amplifying the message about this is an important space, this is something important to invest in, we want to show women backing other women in this space. And let's go find women who have incredible platforms who can really elevate the message around menopause. And so through personal contacts, we started reaching out to women that we knew might be interested in this space. And we made a really key decision very early, which was we would ask, you know, very influential women if they'd be willing to invest in us, and we would not ask them to market for us. This was not about being an influencer for us. This was about showing that they were putting their money into something that they cared about, backing a space, backing a female founder. Yes. And so that was really our message. And our only ask of them was, we want you to speak about menopause and women's health so that you can continue to broaden the message, because that's really the way that we make progress in this field, is we start talking about it outwardly, because unfortunately, menopause has been something that women do not speak about. Their doctors do not speak about. And even our mothers, our aunts don't tell us about. Mm-hmm. And so when you don't talk about it, you don't know if what you're experiencing is what you're supposed to be experiencing or is normal or is distressing. And you don't know that you can do something about it. And that's terrifying to me, because it's more than just symptoms. It actually is about your underlying health. And so that was our ask. So we started building out a network, and then they would invite other friends of theirs. And we really wanted women across the spectrum. So that's why we don't only just have, like, you know, the incredible Gwyneth Paltrow, who I want to say is not only like an incredible, you know, actress, but she's also an incredible founder. So she's a powerhouse that way, you know, but we also have Gwyneth Shotwell from SpaceX. Mm-hmm. We have Carla Harris from Morgan Stanley. We have Abby Wambach, you know, incredible women's sports star. And that's what we wanted to show, is that, you know, this impacts every single woman, no matter where she is. And the one thing I really want everyone to take home from this is, these women have the exact same complaints that I hear from, you know, every other woman who comes to us, which is they were not told what's happening with their body. They have had a really hard time finding great care. They do feel like there's just a mishmash of information out there and they're not sure who to listen to. And so no amount of resources, it seems, gives you a leg up in this space.
Wow.
And that continues to be a huge motivating force for me.
That's amazing. You know, I've heard some snarking about this from some snarky people about Gwyneth Paltrow. Like, how is this woman who's constantly on cleanses having a hard time? And then that's exactly what I thought. This is just speaking to how tricky it is. And I also thought this moment, Alicia, was like, just from watching this space, I feel like it was like a watershed moment in the US, really, because you have like my celebrity peers kind of talking about it and saying it. And it's like, it just felt so validating. It just really did. And I know people say, well, celebrities, it doesn't mean anything when they talk about something. It does. Like, you know, ever since I think Magic Johnson spoke out, you know, about being HIV positive, they've done studies of what a tremendous ripple effect it has in education and awareness. So just the fact that it was such a force in so many of them and so many and across so many spectrums, like it really felt like something very significant. Did it feel like that to you?
Well, yeah.
other than it being very significant for your company.
No, I completely agree with you. And, you know, it means a lot to hear it from you. Feel very validating that we're doing the right thing. I've heard it echoed by many other people that it means a lot to see these influential women stepping up, saying something, speaking about it openly. And it also meant a lot to a lot of people to see this level of investment go into menopause. Mm-hmm. And I hadn't expected that, and I hadn't seen it from that perspective. But I wholeheartedly agree, because the minute you start showing that these are real businesses to invest in, that they are very big markets, we're going to see a lot more businesses and investment go into this space.
Hey guys, it's Joel from Momentous Experience here. How you going? If you listen to people that I catch up with here and around the world talking about their mental health, the challenges they face, and how they've managed it, it's all about spreading awareness and promoting a peaceful and balanced life. So join me again, Momentous Experience, on Spotify, Apple, and Google.
Now, Evernow seems to me my dream. Like, I can only access this, and I'm not involved. I'm not making any. You just look at the website. It's like you've got to sign up. You can see a doctor. They can send the stuff to your house. You don't even have to leave. You don't have to go in. You don't have to go into a doctor. I mean, there's a reason why you're ahead here. But how have you been able to do this? How does it work?
a lot of blood, sweat, and tears. It's one step in front of the other every single day. Building a phenomenal team, you know, bringing on great people and figuring it out and asking a lot of questions and asking for help. And every time you hit a barrier, you just figure out a way around it and keep going. I mean, it's like a lot of things. Like, it looks, you know, it's an overnight success, 4 years in the making. Right? Yeah. It's that kind of thing. It just takes a lot of time to build. And I will tell you, even today, I'm like, oh, there's so much more we need to do to make it a better experience, to serve more women, for more of their journey. Like that's what I think about every day, which is what's the next layer out that we can build to continue to improve the service for more women.
Now, there's no rest, right? Like, because you just
rest. you get to a peak and then you see the next peak.
Did COVID help? Did COVID accelerate things, do you think?
I'm sure it did.
For you? Yeah.
I'm absolutely positive, because it just gave you these tailwinds where people, women and physicians were much more open to getting care through a telehealth service. We also saw some relaxation of regulatory policy across states, which accelerated some things. Unfortunately, a lot of that is rolling back.
Oh.
But I think overall, we're going to have made many steps forward in telehealth.
All right. So I just want to know, because you're an engineer, you went to MIT.
I did.
You've had some grades. You had some grades to get in there. But your job, okay. Deputy Director of the Biological Technologies Office at DARPA.
Yes.
Which DARPA, I know everyone in the U.S. knows what DARPA is, but the Defense Advanced Research Projects Agency, the Pentagon. Yeah. Explain what it was and how you went from there to menopause.
So DARPA is one of the most incredible, incredible places I've ever worked. It was started and funded right after the Soviets launched Sputnik. And it was created because the U.S. leadership and military leadership basically saw it as a failure of the U.S. to launch something before the Soviets and be surprised by it. And so they decided, never shall we be surprised again by a technological advance via another country. So let's create this agency whose sole purpose is to be at the technological frontier, both for the U.S. In terms of its own strategic capabilities, as well as for understanding what other strategic capabilities of other countries might be. DARPA is infamous for having been the birthplace of the internet, and it was known as the ARPANET. They created stealth technology. When I was there at the Biological Technologies Office, we funded a little company named Moderna, who you may know now, who created the RNA vaccine for COVID, because that was a wild idea. So it's really an incredible place. And we had two jobs there. One was at first really investing in breakthrough technologies. And I focused a lot in the biotech space. And then I was deputy director of that office for a little while as well. And literally it was going and finding the brightest minds across the U.S., whether they were in research institutions or in private industry, and working together to really fund breakthrough research and technology. And I will tell you, it was incredible because to me, you really got to see breakthrough technologies and you got to make investments like those, for example, in Moderna that become real. They go from vision to reality. And that, I mean, that's what drives me to be an entrepreneur. And so how I made the transition was, you know, I was funding all these groups and some of them were very small startups. And I was just like, I was just feeling that hunger to be in it every day and building something. I will tell you, it's far harder than funding something to build it every day because there's just so much grunt work involved. And it's just hard. It's hard sometimes when you're in the thick of it to remember the bigger vision you're building towards. I was very lucky in that I was approached by, believe it or not, Sue Siegel and Jeff Immelt from GE to go launch a company with GE Ventures in the diagnostic space. What a gift. What a gift to land in my lap. And I said yes. And so moved out to Silicon Valley and we built a consumer diagnostics company, still exists, Drawbridge Health. And it was a phenomenal experience. We built a team. We took a device through FDA and I just loved it. And during the course of that experience, really fell in love with healthcare and fell in love with women's health because it was one of the industries that we were selling into, and in particular fertility, IVF. And so I just had the itch to go start another company from scratch. And so departed that company and then spent 6 months doing nothing but scouting the fertility landscape, going to all the conferences, reading all the papers, talking to women, and even underwent IVF myself during that period of time. Oh. So I knew it from so many perspectives. And the depth of science was fascinating to me, being a scientist and engineer. And the business was incredible to me. And I just thought, this is what I want to do. You might ask how I then got to menopause.
Yeah, because you're so young.
Yeah. So halfway through that, I start reading about young women who were experiencing infertility due to chemotherapy. Mm. And it turns out the other side of infertility, especially early infertility, is early menopause. These are two sides of the same coin. And we just often don't tie them together in our own heads. And reading about the impacts of this early infertility, early menopause on young women's bodies, early death, brittle bones, incredible cognitive issues, it was really striking and moving. And the incredible science that was being done to understand why these were manifesting and the impacts on women's health and what we could do to treat them, it raised a question in my mind. Well, what happens when women go through menopause at the normal age? And, you know, I'm embarrassed to say now, but I thought the normal age was like 65.
Yeah, me too.
At the time, I'm in my late 30s.
No, I did too.
Yeah. So I start reading about it. And first of all, I'm like, holy shit, menopause begins at 51. And what? Like, you actually start having, perimenopause and all these symptoms in your late 40s. Why has no one ever told me about any of this? And then I start reading things like, well, did she know that women's lifespan is correlated with the age that they go through menopause? So, you know, my head is exploding. And then I start learning menopause is the trigger of all these diseases of aging. And all I can think is, I'm living in the heart of Silicon Valley, where everyone talks about longevity nonstop. And we've now, you know, identified this very clear health event in a woman's life that every woman goes through that's very clearly tied to longevity. And I've never heard a word about it. This seems like something I should maybe go spend some more time on and do something about. And so that leads to me really deep diving into menopause and all the science and treatments around it. And at that point, I still think I'm going to do this very deep biotech company until I talk to my IVF physician and I'm telling him about this idea. And he's like, oh my God, please do something about this. I treat all the women in my family, including my own mother, for menopause, because it is a hormonal issue. And so many doctors are not trained in how menopause affects your hormones, how those hormones affect your body, what the hormonal therapies are, which ones are safe, how to prescribe them, da, 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 da. And there are safe and effective hormonal therapies that can actually do something for women today. And we went back and forth. I read all the papers, became quite convinced that the science was very strong. I just thought to myself, how can I not do this today? There are so many women in need. These treatments exist. There are doctors who are great at treating menopause. There may not be a lot of them, but if I use telemedicine, I don't need a lot. We can still give access to so many women. And at that point, it was game over. This is the company I need to start right now, today. I don't have another choice. And that was the birth of Evernow.
Have you had a hard time finding doctors?
I have been fortunate in that because of just the network that I have here, I've been able to find, you know, the doctors who are very skilled in this, and they tend to know each other. So you just find a couple and then you start building from there.
Right. Okay.
I will say, though, like, definitely we've put in place a really strong training program so that our medical providers are up to speed. We employ the majority of our own providers in-house because this is a complex health area. Women do tend to be older. There tend to be other confounding factors or other health things going on. And so you need a more sophisticated kind of medical knowledge for really treating women's health and menopause.
Well, this is one of the things that concerns me only with this real huge push to menopause hormone therapy that I'm seeing, like just only menopause hormone therapy, you know, like I really see it in the UK, but just that there are so many other things that are going on and so many other health issues.
Yes.
That I feel like it's selling women on, you know, you've got to be on hormone therapy, but if you don't iron out some of these other things, I don't know what's going to happen. So what do you think about that part?
For healthy women who are under a physician's care, for most people, it is incredibly safe.
Okay.
But you are absolutely right. You do need to go to a medical provider who is skilled and will ask the right questions about you, your health, your medical history, surgical histories, family history, so that at least you can have a dialogue. Because for some women, it may not be the best choice, or it may be, you know, 50-50, and you have to make the choice for yourself. It's not always black and white. So I think, you know, women should definitely hold their doctors to a high standard and make sure that they're well-versed in women's health during this stage of life.
Yeah. Yeah, I had a gut issue that, like, I feel strongly about this because I had a gut issue that needed healing. And I thought I was dying of perimenopause for like 9 months, you know? And then I just ended up going to the gastro and he was asking me some questions and he diagnosed this gut issue. And I just feel like if you don't have the right doctor, right? Because some of these doctors don't really know very much about menopause. I just am worried about slapping the hormones on like that. Yeah, I might have felt better. I might have never addressed the gut issue. And now I feel great. And now if I choose to take hormone therapy, it will be, this is just me common sense talking. I'm not a doctor, but I feel it will be more meaningful.
Yep.
If I'm using it, you know, if I have the health there. Okay. I read that you said, this is so exciting, that you have the largest database of perimenopause symptoms because you've been tracking all these women. Yeah. How many? So tell me about this. How many? 100,000 women? Is that true?
Yeah. So So not that number of women over the entire 2 years. It's accumulated over time. There is a cohort of women we've been tracking for nearly 2 years, and then obviously a larger cohort over the last year. One of the things that was very important to me in starting EverNow was to ensure that the data and information that was coming in on women and their symptoms, their severity of the symptoms, how the symptoms were improving on different treatments, that we would take that knowledge and use it to create insights and move the field of menopausal and midlife medicine forward. That was personally very important to me to do. And I think it's really amazing what we've been able to do with it. And I'm really excited about some results that we're about to start publishing in other areas. So definitely stay tuned. But just think about it. It's hard to recruit this many women. There's not a lot of great longitudinal structured data sources out there. And so, it would be a waste not to contribute to the body of knowledge with what we're able to do. Obviously, we take privacy super seriously. We de-identify all the data. But I'm excited about using this information to better care for women, to put it out there so physicians can better care for their patients. We can give women this knowledge so they can take more control over their health. I think one of the most interesting things that we found, and I'll just give you a highlight, is we're really seeing racial differences in severity and symptom severity. And one of the reasons this really matters is that we know, and it's been proven in the literature, that women who have severe vasomotor symptoms like hot flashes have, I think it's either a 70 or 80% increase in their risk of a cardiovascular event.
This is crazy. Yeah. So if you're having hot flashes, it's always been like, oh, I'm having a hot flash. And when I was having them, I said, it feels like a neurological whole body event. This doesn't feel right. This correlation is, you need to address them. You should have
exactly like we should be having this conversation, which is like why we're having it right now. So women know, but if you're from, if you're part of a group of women who's more predisposed to having worse symptoms, like you should also be getting extra care to protect your cardiovascular health. And I want to make sure that women know they should be looking out for that, because I think it comes for many women a surprise, because so many women have always had great cardiovascular health during their earlier years.
Do you have any theories on why that might be?
Yes, I have a hypothesis. And one of my hypotheses, and I'm not trying to, obviously there needs to be a lot more research and study in here, is that we do know that when women are going through menopause and you have this drop in estrogen, you're in a higher inflammatory state. And so we also know that when you're in a higher inflammatory state, you tend to have worse menopausal symptoms like hot flashes. So for example, if you're a smoker, you have a lot more inflammation and your hot flashes are much worse. Mm-hmm. We also know a higher inflammatory state leads to things like cardiovascular disease. And so it wouldn't be surprising to me if what we find out is that these women are more predisposed to being in a higher inflammatory state when they're going through menopause. That's why they're having worse vasomotor symptoms. And it's also why they're at higher risk for cardiovascular disease.
So it's almost like a signal, like the hot flash is a signal of something.
It is. That's a perfect way to put it.
Rather than the cause of it. It's like a warning sign. Wow. Yeah. That makes a lot of sense.
Yeah. So, I find this area fascinating because if that's true, it means there may be other things that women can do to improve their inflammatory state and to bring down inflammation. Yeah. I mean, this is why we see exercise being really great for helping to kind of moderate symptoms. It won't remove them, but it can moderate them. Anecdotally, I've heard from many women that when they put themselves on an anti-inflammatory diet, that can help. So, well, I'm really excited about it because it might be there's some non-hormonal solutions, especially for women who may not be ready for it or might not be able to take hormonal solutions. There are other ways they can bring down their inflammatory state that might mitigate some of these symptoms and mitigate some of these health risks that they're facing.
Well, I know when I do inflammatory things, like eat sugar, drink alcohol, or get stressed out, I get hot flashes. And when I'm not doing those inflammatory things, I don't. and I don't wake up at the night sweaty, and, you know.
That's fascinating. And I'm not surprised. Mm-hmm. I'm not surprised.
Okay. Something else that you said that I love, that I'm quoting you all the time. You said you have to be the CEO of your own health.
Amen. I feel so strongly about that. You are hiring. You are hiring a doctor to take care of your health. You know, I can speak personally. I always felt like I should defer. And of course, when you hire an expert, you want to make sure that you're weighing their opinion. And often I do defer to the opinion of an expert, but that doesn't mean you can't ask questions. It doesn't mean you can't do your own research and ask them about it. You should have a very high standard for the people that you are hiring to take care of your health. And even in an insurance market, you are hiring somebody to take care of your health.
Wow. I like that. That is, that is something else. Okay. If you were doing okay with your menopause symptoms and this prevention aspect, I ask a lot of people this. Would you go on hormone therapy if you were doing okay with your symptoms for prevention?
I will speak personally, and my personal answer is absolutely.
Okay.
Because it will protect your bones, because there is great evidence that it prevents the accumulation of truncal fat, which we know is so metabolically unhealthy. Because so much of the evidence points to taking hormonal therapy early is likely to protect your cardiovascular system. And because of all of that, my personal choice would be to take it, even if I wasn't having bad symptoms. And it doesn't mean you have to be on high doses. The doses we're talking about are much less than what you're going to find in a traditional oral birth control pill. And I think that's very important for women to understand, which is the doses are much lower than you're going to get in birth control. You don't need to take a lot for those protective effects. But that's my own personal choice based on what I've read in the scientific literature.
And I think people don't really realize, I get this question a lot. I mean, hormone therapy has basically veered from synthetic hormone therapy that we were worried about to bioidentical, or in some countries they call it body identical. So it's the estrogen, the patch that you're using is bioidentical. You're taking progesterone, not progestin. Progestin is the tricky one, and the risk seems to come from the combination. So yeah, can you just talk about that a little bit? Because I know for me that's an education. When I started out on this, I wasn't aware of the distinction.
Yes. And the latest data is looking really great on these therapies too. So estradiol is the primary form of estrogen that doctors are now prescribing. And it's transdermal estradiol, which is the best one. And why that's best is it goes straight into your bloodstream. When you take an oral pill, it's processed by the liver and so can create some other forms of estrogen. And so the great thing is that the stroke and blood clot risk is much lower with the patch. It's basically negligible when you're taking the patch. So many more women can take it. Number two, the progesterone. There was some really great data out recently looking at a meta-analysis of what the risk increases on different forms of progestins. And one of the latest meta-analyses I just saw, which is progesterone basically had no increase in risk of breast cancer. And so that's really exciting data, which means hormonal therapy really is safer than ever for women today. And so the science has moved, and women should ensure that their doctors are up to date on what this latest scientific literature says, because doctors who were trained 20 or 30 years ago are going to be operating on a different set of assumptions about that risk profile than the latest data that's coming out today.
I find a lot of doctors are very meh about progesterone. Like they have to give it to counter the estrogen if you have a uterus, but they're very unenthused about its benefits. And it seems like there are benefits for progesterone when you take it.
Yeah, it's really interesting. It is kind of like a debate in the community. I mean, the main benefit for women who have not had a hysterectomy, they still have their uterus, is that it ensures that your uterine lining doesn't overgrow. So it's a protective mechanism. Interestingly, Dr. Jennifer Garrison, she's a PhD, not an MD. She's one of our scientific advisors, has some really interesting research looking at the role of progesterone in regulating some of your brain circuits, which control parts of your body. And so it might be that progesterone is more important than we thought it was in maintaining kind of some normal bodily processes as you age. This is very much more on the forefront of science. We have to do more research into it. But I mean, I don't think we're super surprised if we've always had a lot of progesterone in our bodies. Probably some parts of our bodies were relying on it.
Yeah. It's the integrative, like functional role that's more tuned into progesterone, I find. It's just funny, like, because I'll just ask doctors about it. And it's just like, I don't know. Like, it does. It's like, you know.
It's because a lot of the medical training, again, isn't just up to date. And so, you know, for a long time, we didn't think it was important at all. And then we were like, oh, it actually is important for maintaining a healthy uterus. And we just thought it was important for that. And
yeah,
then
yeah.
We're like, it turned out to be important for these other things.
Well, you know, in science, I mean, it's like anything else. You go down a road and then you have to back up and go down another road. I mean, it's... I'm grossly oversimplifying it, but it's not that... It's... In every field, there's a similar way, right? You just, everyone has to sort of change their mind. Okay, what bothers you in this space? What about menopause now? Is it niggles you? Is there anything?
The thing I'm really trying to figure out, it's a more like not esoteric, but is what to do for women who have had a history of breast cancer.
Mm.
How do we still keep them healthy? How do we make sure that they can get relief from symptoms, but they may not be able to take a traditional estrogen? And so one of the things I'm excited about are these things called SERMs, the estrogen receptor modulators. And these are slightly modified forms of estrogen that could be modified, for example, so they don't bind to breast tissue, but they could still be active in your body and provide relief from symptoms and maybe protect your bones and your cardiovascular system. And so... I'm really excited about their potential. There isn't much out there yet right now, but that's something like I just personally think about a lot and like to do my own research into, because there's so many women who've had breast cancer or have a really strong history of breast cancer in their family and very worried about taking a hormonal therapy. And so I want to see those brought to market.
Yeah.
I want to see those brought to market.
What about testosterone and DHEA? Are you involved in those?
We are less so DHEA, but Dr. Leah Millhiser, who is our chief medical officer, is very well versed in it. And we talk about it a lot in thinking about how and when we may want to bring it to our patient population, because there is a real role for it. It is more challenging because of the regulatory situation around testosterone and because there is not currently an FDA-approved form of testosterone for women in the U.S. And women need much, much less than men. So it is an ongoing active conversation at the company.
Yeah. Okay. That's exciting. Menopause as a female hormone deficiency syndrome. What do you think?
Oh man, now we're getting into the like dicey area and the hot button stuff of menopause. I don't know if I call it a syndrome. A syndrome feels a little weird for something that is just destined to happen to everybody, but I will definitely say menopause is caused by a deficiency in a hormone, period.
Mm-hmm.
People don't like to talk about it because, oh, well, it's natural. You know, well, it's also natural that like, you become your insulin like regulation becomes deficient when you age. That doesn't mean that we wouldn't help somebody by giving them more insulin or helping them with their diet and how they work. So like, I don't think calling a deficiency of estrogen is a negative thing or over medicalizing it. We're just saying what it is, and then we could talk about how to address it.
Okay. What do you think about these companies that are racing to cancel menopause, delay menopause? This is really interesting to me.
Yeah, I think it's
one of them.
Go for it. I am for women choosing how they want to go through menopause, period. And let's be clear, when we're talking about it, we're not talking about extending fertility forever. We're talking about when we're talking about canceling menopause, let's get really clear. We're talking about canceling the symptoms and health effects of menopause. I think there's a huge number of women who love the freedom that comes from menopause, from having your monthly period, from feeling like your body is tied to reproduction. There can be a real freedom post-menopause. But I think what we should be really clear about is we're talking about canceling the symptoms and health effects of menopause.
Yeah. You shared an article on LinkedIn that I had read that I loved, from the Neolife one. And that's where I just loved, because I was, you know, of course, everyone's like, what do you mean? You don't want to cancel it. I don't want a baby when I'm 80. And then it brought it up. They said, no, it's not this. It's like just making it so maybe it's not a geriatric pregnancy when you're 40 or, you know.
Exactly. I'm with you. Okay.
Well, I could talk to you all day. I just have... It's amazing what you've done. What's next?
What's next? We have a bunch of new things that we're launching around serving more women across the life cycle of menopause, both pre and post, and it's serving more women in terms of the therapies that are available.
Okay.
And so those are the big things coming up on our radar that we'll be launching over the next several months
and growing. So, I guess with all that
money
you got. Yeah.
Yeah.
Does everyone think you have $28.5 million now?
They do. And kind of, I was like, it's amazing how fast that goes.
Yeah.
But when you start growing a team and building all the things that need to be built, I mean, really, we went from something tiny to something much larger. But with that larger engine, we can do much more. And that's a really exciting thing.
Okay.
Thank you so much, Anne-Marie. It's like such a pleasure to reconnect and to talk.
I appreciate it. Great to connect with you. We'll talk again before there's another pandemic.
Please.
Thank you. Thank you so much for joining me. If you like this conversation, I hope you'll check out some of my other interviews on the Hot Flashing podcast. Subscribe, give a rating, maybe a review, and come back for more next week.
Hot Flash Inc. was created and is hosted by Anne-Marie McQueen, produced and edited by Sonia Mack. The information contained in this podcast is intended for informational purposes only and is not intended for the purpose of diagnosing, treating, curing, or preventing any disease. Before using any products referenced on the podcast, consult with your healthcare provider, read all labels, and heed all directions and cautions that accompany the products. Information received through the podcast should not be used in place of a consultation or advice from a healthcare provider. If you suspect you have a medical problem, i.e. menopause or anything else, or any healthcare questions, please promptly see your healthcare provider. This podcast, including Anne-Marie McQueen and any producers or editors, disclaim any responsibility from any possible adverse effects from the use of any information contained herein. Opinions of guests on this podcast are their own, and the podcast does not endorse or accept responsibility for statements made by guests. This podcast does not make any representations or warranties about a guest's qualifications or credibility. This podcast may contain paid endorsements and advertisements for products or services. Individuals on this podcast may have direct or indirect financial interest in products or services referred to herein. This podcast is owned by Hot Flash Inc. Media.